The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Episode 217 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion. If you're new here, I am Billy, your Christian, American, heterosexual, pro-gun, liberty-minded permaculture designer, and there ain't a whole lot of them out there like me. Bam! Can you dig it? All right, this episode, as always, brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com. Turn that simp into a pimp. Bam! Peaceful Valley, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Just trying to rewire my brain here, y'all. Anyway, it is a busy day, but I'll get into that in a minute. If you would like to tip a pimp, do it over there on the Fountain app, where you can listen to all your podcasts over there, even triple up the speed. If you want to drop a derivation of Bitcoin over there called sats, you can drop a S-A-T on a P-I-M-P. And yes, PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion. Got to say that right off because so many new people are coming in and they're crying to me, oh my goodness, I can't believe you're a pimp. No. You know, it's funny, after all this time, I keep having to explain this to folks. And I understand there's new people coming in all the time. But hey, if I got to repeat myself, you'll understand the reasons why. All right, so man, 217 episodes already in. Hopefully everybody's digging this new segment I'm doing on Wednesday, the Wild Wednesday, where it could be something permaculture related, could be something health related. Man, the one we got coming up next week is going to be with my man Rob from over at Disorganized Productions. He's got a podcast. He's over in Holland. And yeah, man, he drops a lot of great information over there. Man, I had a really great conversation with him that I really didn't see coming. I'll be honest with you. The idea was we were going to basically simulcast a podcast, and he was going to record it, and you know, I was going to record it as well, and we were just going to have a conversation and kind of chew things up. What I didn't expect is all the solutions that we brought to the table. So I'm going to try to do more and more and more of that. I know there's a lot of weird, crazy stuff going on in the world. And folks, I'm not going to lie to you. It's going to get worse, probably exponentially worse, but that's exactly why we talk about permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. That's exactly what it's all about. So just, you know, keep your chin up. And if you'll see the theme in all the videos I'm doing out there, y'all, there is a preparedness theme to it. That's why in my video, if anybody's just, you know, listening to the podcast and you're not seeing the videos, we have a YouTube channel called called Perma Pastures Farm. And that's where we do the basically, how do I say this? It's basically a how-to channel. And when you get down to brass tacks on it, it's really how to feed yourself and your family, especially in these weird and crazy times. And things are going to get worse and they're going to get weird. But this is why I'm doing this little segment on cardboard as of late. And I'm going to do, I got one more video in the queue regarding cardboard, and you definitely want to check that one out. That is almost certainly going to be on, I think I'm going to put that one out on Sunday. I'm probably going to get it filmed on Sunday and then put it out the very same day. Try to do it where more eyes are likely to see it, but man, they are coming down on us and a number of other people like a ton of bricks. But that's exactly why we started this podcast, because I saw that coming. And if you go over to platforms like Rumble, yeah, it's another way to get your word out, but nobody's really seeing it. Yeah, I know Rumble has its benefits over there, but if you're not a Dan Bongino, or they have their favorites over there, and if you're not in there, then you're not going to get to play. But really, the idea was never to get a million subscribers. The idea was to get the right ones. And the right ones to me, especially in this day and age, have exclusively to do with all the people that see, like the Sons of Issachar, you see the signs of the times, and you're willing to prepare for them. So that's exactly what this podcast has kind of shifted into, and really the YouTube channel as well. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that in the good news section. All right, so let me get into the farm news. And by the way, the Homestead Honey, she's down there finally eating something. We have been going at a mile a minute, y'all. That's exactly why this podcast didn't go out yesterday is, good night, we had to put another compost pile together, and it's just been crazy. All the weird, and everybody's got them too. You got those seasons where it's just going to be so busy where all you do is sleep, get up in the morning, work from sun up till sundown, and then you do it all over again. So the people that are looking to get into this space, just keep that in mind that I have got to, for example, I could do highly well-produced videos on YouTube if I want it. I can't do that if I'm going to do the work I love more than anything is farming and evangelizing this magnificent design science we call permaculture. And the only way I can do this effectively is if I do minimal editing, and that's important. And also when it comes to this podcast, I have to do it like I did back in live radio. There was no, you had commercial breaks, but there's no, hey, I got to edit this out. That didn't happen. So I'm so thankful to have that radio background at KMBZ in Kansas City. And it gave me this ability to be able to do this so efficiently. So that's exactly why I'm able to go in here and do as much as we do. And at the same time, be able to go ahead and do what we do in farming. But hey, it's going to be those times where it's just, look, I didn't want to give y'all a shortchanged episode and kind of halfway wing it, man. I'm not doing that. And so I was like, I'll just wait and do it Friday and give you my very best. And I'm trying as best I can to record these earlier in the day, but this new workout regimen is kind of, how do I say it? It's, making me reorganize certain things. And that's a good thing. That's a really, really good thing. So far as that, well, I might as well just go ahead and tell you, as far as that farm news, that's exactly how we are rocking along these days. We got this new regimen, and we're going to add more stuff to it this next week. And I don't have liberty yet to tell you about it because I did sign a non-disclosure agreement. They made certain guarantees to me, and we're going to find out. And I told them before I see some markers on this stuff, I'm not going to tell the people out there about it because it does cost a fair amount of money. But I don't know about y'all, man. If something will cure or fix certain ailments or problems or whatever the case may be, I'm willing, especially if I don't have to go to an MD or somebody else out there, if these are things I can do myself, man, I'm going to absolutely do it. So part of that, adding that new regimen in here, requires that to a certain extent that you become selfish. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, selfishness, I don't know that anybody would ever call me selfish per se. I'm sure we all are in our own way. But as a person in general, no, I wouldn't say at all that I'm selfish. But you've got to put yourself in the driver's seat for a little while and then get yourself off and running. So that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm getting this regimen. I'm doing it. I mean, you talk about fastidious compliance, y'all. I don't know that anybody's doing it any more hardcore than I am. And that is requiring a great deal out of me, but it also requires less. And man, I can't wait to tell you guys about it. If it is in fact, doing what they say it is. And by every judgment I can tell so far, it does seem to be working, and I'm not even 2 weeks into this thing. So when I get the opportunity and when I get liberty to do so, I am definitely going to let you guys know about it. And So like I said, before I do, I want to make sure I have some really good markers on myself before I tell everybody else about it. Because like I said, these things are a certain, it does require an investment. But there's, I'll pay anything if it means I don't, well, it's a whole lot cheaper than insurance. I'll put it that way. So that's exactly what I'm working on. So other farm news, we got sheep on the mountain. They're back up on, well, this whole place is a mountain, but we got them up in the place I was going to use for winter stockpile because I'm doing something of another experiment. I know there's a whole lot of R&D going on out here, and I could leave them out in the main pasture, but I got them working this top side because it's just into August, and I think, and I don't think, I'm reasonably sure of it, that there's a whole lot of tree hay for them to eat up there. There's what was a bunch of shiny silvergrass is still there, but nowhere near to the extent that it once was. So this other grass, the beneficial grass, the grass they will eat, is actually coming up. So I got them. It's really cool when they go through like that, because they will, this Chinese silvergrass, I mean, this stuff can be 8 feet tall, even taller sometimes. It's cool because they'll eat the grass around it, and then I'll go through with a weed eater and chop that silvergrass down, and I'm staying ahead of its growth cycle. And then it's also adding more carbon to the soil. If you don't want to see these bad things come back, y'all, I said all that to say this. If you got something out there, thorns, briars, bristles, the whole nine yards, yeah, if you got to run through a brush hog, yeah, go ahead and get that done. But you better get some carbon on the ground, or, you know, your first line of defense may very well be goats. I don't like goats. I don't like the management issues of them. I get all the benefits of a goat out of a hair sheep. Not all of them, but a great deal of them, out of a hair sheep without any of the management nightmares. And having had goats before, yes, they were a management nightmare, at least for us. So that's exactly the point there, is that they're on that mountain, they're working around that silver grass, and I'm thinking this experiment is going to pay off in a big way, because it's August, we're getting tons of rain, and my winter stockpile, I'm letting them hit that one more time, and then I think I'm going to leave them off of it probably until winter, and then I'll give them a couple of passes up there. Let's see what else here. Oh, this is a big one, man. We are redoing the food forest out there, and that's the video I think that just came down today as I'm recording this. I think it's on YouTube right now. And unless, you know, for some reason our, you know, internet's been running real slow as of late, so hopefully it's up right now. And what we're doing there, y'all, this, man, I can't even begin to tell you how important this is for so many people out there, because I hear from you. I get your letters, I see your emails, and I see your responses. And I know so many of you have bought a piece of land, and let's be honest here, man. You're new to this, just like I once was. And you're thinking, good night, man. How do I even get a foothold in this stuff? Pay attention to the videos I've put out as of late. It is directed at all of you people who are at a new place. You're trying to figure out how to get a harvest of any time. The fastest way to build soil in a garden is, I mean, the fastest way I know of, is sheet mulching and planting right in it. I mean, Jeff Lawton's Instant Garden, go, you know, look that one up. You know, you'll find it. We've done it numerous times. In fact, in one area where we're about to pick it up, that'll be the video that comes out on Sunday. We got this patch of potatoes down there that was in ground that was, there was no hope of ever growing a potato in because it was so doggone hard. You need kind of loose soil, you know, to grow a potato, a sweet potato, something like that. And we basically sheet mulched, or lasagna garden, whatever you choose to call it. And instead of picking the weeds out of there, I don't fool with that, y'all. We just put it over and over and over again. And we're going to do that demonstration on, I think it's, like I said, it's probably going to come out Sunday. Yeah. But back to this other thing that I was talking about. There's this part in the food forest where it kind of got away from me. And the reason why is, like everybody else, man, you're busy. You got things going on. So I was like, okay, problem is the solution. Got tons of cardboard, tons of access to it. Look, folks, you go to, I'm dead serious, the best cardboard. I mean, thick. Not, I mean, really, really well-made cardboard for, that's the stuff I really like for a food forest, because I'm not going to have to mess with it for about a year, if I even have to mess with it then, because the idea that the beneficial things are going to outdo the things you don't. Well, I sheet mulched this thing initially, what was it, 3-4 years ago, maybe? No, not four, maybe 3 years ago. And I'm just now dealing with it again. I let it alone. You know, the weeds came back, and, so I'm thinking all these people out there who are looking to get a foothold in something, or maybe something got away from you, or you want to bring it back, or check this out, just change up the design. Maybe you don't like what you got there. Maybe you want to just cover it all up. Well, instead of just going out there and yanking everything out of the ground, don't do that. Cover it up. Anything you don't want, cover it up with cardboard. Dead serious. cover it up with cardboard. For example, you ever try to pick a piece of cardboard or old rug up off of a piece of grass? What did you see under it? You saw life, and you probably saw a lot of it. Now, I'm not a big fan of putting plastic down like so many people are, you know, in their gardens. I think Justin Rhodes made that popular. I'm not a big fan of that because I'm pretty convinced that it's going to jack up your soil life. But if you go out there and do the cardboard, man, that is worm crack. Cardboard is worm crack. So the idea with the cardboard, the whole impetus for this is that if you want to change something, cardboard's easy to find. Carbon is relatively easy to find, whether you're using straw, and let's say you're going to make it a instant garden, or if you're going to make it a perennial garden or a food forest, well, wood chips, whatever the case may be. Cardboard is your friend. And I don't know where this came from, but there are some permaculture designers out there saying, oh, cardboard's the worst thing in the world. Well, if you're saying that, you don't know a whole lot about composting. And that's what we're going to be talking about in the main topic here today. And yeah, you don't understand that, you know, all of those so-called toxins that are in that cardboard get tied up in medium and long chain carbonic acids, which basically means they are inert. They don't, if there's anything bad in the soil or anywhere, that is the beauty of compost. It's just like the good Lord knew what he was doing because it ties up all that junk. It doesn't necessarily make it disappear, but it creates no harm. So it's just tied up. It can't do anything. Man, I mean, this is what wakes me up in the morning, y'all. This is why I love permaculture. This is why it is my passion, because you learn these incredible things along the way. But anyway, no matter where you are in that continuum, cardboard is your friend. It is a big friend. And in a place like I talk about in the video, in a place like a food forest, I'm going to triple up that cardboard. I could quadruple it, even put five of them out there if I want it. And it's still going to be awesome. It's probably going to be even better depending on how alive your soil is, but that is a surefire way to bring life into it. In a place where you're going to do an instant garden, you're not going to go three thick. I mean, it's going to be a nightmare. Once that stuff gets wet, trying to cut through that is going to not be fun. But these are simple, easy, tried and true ways, y'all, that work like nothing else I've ever tried before. So go out there, give it a shot, because I guarantee it's going to blow your mind, especially if you're saying, man, I just want to grow something. Look, just pick a 10 by 10 patch. That's all you got to do. Start there. Take a 10 by 10 patch and then go from there. Don't go any further. Don't try to get slick or anything. Just do a 10 by 10 patch, put some plant starts in there, and you are off and running. It's really that simple. So what else we got going here is lots of potatoes. Oh my goodness. Yeah, Michelle's drying out the ones that we did in that last video, but we still got a bunch more. We got, you know, potatoes that come up at different parts of the season. We try to do that in every possible way. That's more her lane than it is mine as far as when it comes to annual stuff. I'm more into the perennial thing, but she handles that part of it. So we got more potatoes to pick up out of there, and we got, well, potatoes in two different spots. One of them is in an actual bed, and I don't know what that's going to look like. I'm guessing it's going to be pretty good. And then the others are down in that instant garden area that's situated in the orchard. And yeah, we're going to get tons more potatoes out of there. And man, I'll tell you what, I'm pretty critical about a lot of these weirdos that live near Asheville. But man, I'll tell you what, one area where these folks really got it together, man, is their food. Now, they wouldn't touch a GMO to save their lives, but they'll go out there and get a jab in a heartbeat. But that's on them. But man, they gave us these triple organic potatoes that were dirt cheap. I mean, there was a co-op, and I don't know if you'd call it a co-op. It was basically a community group or whatever, and they sent out this blanket email like, hey, you want these triple organic potatoes? Well, yeah, we got them from last year, and then, of course, we kept some seed potatoes back. And I'm telling you what, they are the cat's meow. And I still can't get my head around the fact that, I'm not going to go there, but I just, these people, man, they have a love for great food, and it shows. So yeah, you gotta take the crookeds with the straights, right? So we're getting lots of rain around here as of late. We went through It seems like every year there's like 2 weeks of no rain, which is extremely weird when you live in a temperate rainforest. And we've been getting it like multiple times out of the day. I don't remember doing it quite like this any other year that we've been here. This is going on, what, year six, I think. And we're getting this rain, man. It's like it'll come in waves. It'll come, and then, bam, another one comes through. And then you just when you get started on something, that's why it took me forever and a day to try to get this compost pile together, because I'm out there using this little push mower I bought, and, you know, with a bagger on it so I can collect the stuff to use for compost. And, man, I'm running over comfrey. I'm running over grass. I'm running over weeds. I'm doing all that stuff. And then here comes the rain. And then as soon as it goes away, I'm back out there again. But, yeah, you ever try to mow wet grass? Yeah, so it's clogging up, man. It took forever. And I went through literally three T-shirts yesterday. If it's humid here in the mountains, I know it is sweltering everywhere else. I mean, yeah, it's usually just, I guess maybe you got 2 weeks, maybe of uncomfortable weather here. But outside of that, man, it's like every day is a dream here. And I love it. I do indeed. So I'm going to tell you one little trick that I don't know if I invented it. I don't know what the case is. But, okay, so I love berries. So does Michelle. She puts them in her smoothie every day. And blueberries are my favorite as far as berries go. I love them all, but, you know, if I had to pick one, blueberries are it. Well, we had some left over in the freezer from last year. We have some strawberries that we picked. We had like 100 gallons of them last year. Not so many this year, but, you know, enough to wet your beak. And we had them in the freezer. So we freeze-dried a crap load of strawberries from last year. And then we had a bunch of them that we froze, and, you know, she didn't get through them all. But, well, you know, strawberry season's come and gone again. And I'm telling you one cool way, and this goes right back into the preparedness quotient that some of you might want to consider. Think about this. How many things do you have in your freezer that might be getting a little long in the tooth? We got blueberries. So we had blueberries and strawberries, and what else was it? Some raspberries up there. And, you know, it's, you know, they're getting kind of long in the tooth. So you could compost them. Yeah, you could. Or you could do what we're doing. I said, Michelle, wait, before we do all that, look, is there some kind of recipe you can make out of this thing, like some kind of like a cobbler or crumble or whatever? Well, she made, I never had it before. I mean, we got peaches about to come out of our eyeballs, so I'm glad we kind of got this solved. So she made like an apple, I don't know if you call it a, I don't know. I guess I'm going to call it a crisp or a cobbler. I don't know which one. It was like a cross between the two. And that's how she used them up. So she made like a blueberry cobbler and a strawberry cobbler. I never had either one. And I was like, well, why not, man? I've only ever had peach and a few others. But yeah, I never had a berry cobbler. But she did that, made two big pans of it day before yesterday, and then made two more today. I put those bad boys in the freeze dryer, right? So whenever you put anything that's like a sugary substance in your freeze dryer, when it extracts all the moisture out of there, and I let it dry for a longer time, pretty much anything that's in there, because it's only going to help your preservation. So as it was getting done, I was like, okay, now I'm going to break this stuff up, put it in the Mylar bag, and then put an oxygen absorber in it. But that's not the most efficient way to do it. The most efficient way, believe it or not, stick that bad boy in the Vitamix and then just kind of make it into a little bit of a crumble all over again. Now, when you add moisture to it, it's going to reconstitute and it's going to be perfectly fine. But that's one of the little hacks that I just kind of came up with. When you got some stuff in your freezer that's long in the tooth, think about something you can make with it and then maybe put that away, because we're not going to get through it. I mean, we're still working on that, and we got tons more blueberries and everything else coming. So, you know, make the problem the solution. The problem is, okay, I got all this old stuff in here. It's not bad, but it's not as fresh as the new stuff I have. So make some stuff out of it. Put it in your freeze dryer. That's exactly why. Look, y'all, I mean, that is, as far as harvesting, y'all, I ain't even going to kid you. We got tomatoes coming out of our eyeballs. Michelle's freezing those, because I'll end up making sauce out of it. Another way to go about your preservation with some of this stuff is that I'll make all the tomato sauce we can possibly eat in 1 year, probably over a weekend, okay? So you can go ahead and blanch those tomatoes, or you can do what I do, or what Michelle actually came up with. If you freeze them, then you unfreeze them. You can basically get the skin off of them. That's another way of going about it. You can blanch them, but the problem with blanching them is that there's so much more water to try to get out of the sauce before I put it in the jar. So it's things like that, you know, little hacks that we need more freezer space, but so we got to get that old stuff out. So let's freeze dry it. That's why, folks, that's exactly why I'm all about this Harvest Right freeze dryer. And if you need one, it helps us a great deal. So we got that in the show description. And this thing is the cat's meow, y'all. It's made. I want to give a hat tip to Ben and Denise over at Renewed Homestead, who basically gave us the idea of it. I'd seen it for years, but I never really seriously considered buying one because I'm like, okay, we know how to can and dry and all that stuff. But then when I found out the health component, where you can keep nearly all of your nutritional value in that thing, I was like, okay, that's a game changer for me, man. Especially when you're into preparedness the way I am. I'm thinking, okay, I don't want to eat a nasty MRE. I'm going to make my own, and I'm going to make them better than anything you could even dream of hoping to buy. So, I mean, yeah, that thing is worth its weight in gold, y'all. So I wanted to tell y'all that little hack is that you got those old berries, you got the new ones coming in, you realize you're not going to be able to eat them all. I mean, we got good night, man. When these peaches come through, we already got, oh my goodness, man, what did we get some off of that Belle of Georgia? And then we got, I'm talking like a bumper crop of peaches, y'all, that will absolutely blow your mind. And we're going to have to come up with some really clever ways to go. Now, I'm sure we'll give a fair piece of them away. But at the same time, you know, come up with some really cool stuff in which to preserve this. So my brain's working. Man, I imagine we'll be doing a lot of canning. But just keep in mind, that freeze dryer is a game changer. It really is. Canning, I don't mind one bit. In some ways, I love canning better in certain ways. I don't want to freeze dry tomato sauce, you know. I would rather freeze dry the lasagna I made out of that sauce, or, you know, the chili mac or whatever the case may be that I made out of it. I don't want to freeze dry that stuff. When I run my freeze dryer, y'all, let me just tell you this while I'm on it. I'm not playing around. I'm not doing single use items unless they are things I can eat directly out of that bag. Think about this. Seriously, think about this. If the worst should happen, and when things jump off, do you want to be thinking about how to put together a meal from 10 different freeze-dried ingredients? Yeah, me neither. That's exactly why we put entire meals in there that are meals ready to eat, that all they require is water and, you know, oversalt it, because believe it or not, that may be your only source of mineral. So use really good salt, like Celtic sea salt, Baja gold salt, even Redmond's. The other ones, you know, I'm a big, I love them both. I love them all, actually. And I'll use them for different things. But consider that when you're putting your food back, think about, okay, one thing I learned from a buddy of mine named Robert down in Texas was his mom, he was Polish, and his mom, it was like the coolest thing, man. Every day for lunch, not every day, but pretty often, he would bring in a jar, and it was something that his mom had canned. It had been some kind of stew or whatever the case may be, that his mom had canned, and that's what he'd bring for lunch. And I was like, how cool is that? That makes so much. And of course, you know, it's got to come from immigrants, for, you know, these are people that are pretty doggone efficient. They got to be. That's what he ate every single day for lunch. So transfer that into preparedness. You know, I understand if you're going to go ahead, I just prefer if it's canning. Yeah, you know, if I got a bunch of sweet potatoes like we did last year, yeah, I canned a bunch of those. Regular potatoes, canned a bunch of those. Freeze dryer is definitely efficient when you got a ton of stuff coming in and you can't run your canner quick enough, or you don't have enough of them. All right, y'all. Hopefully that was a real blessing to you, because it's proven to be for us. All right, coming up real soon, y'all, Homesteaders United Jamboree. That's going to be August 29th through the 31st. And it's cool that I get to go out there and process an animal and show up and teach a bunch of people how to do it. That's really cool. But I'll tell you the thing I'm really excited about is that it's going to be a straight up boots on the ground composting class. This ain't going to be two dimensional. It's going to be three dimensional. And I'm going to get out there early. I'm going to put together a pile. We're going to show you the easiest way you've ever seen in your life to get, and it's dummy proof if you just follow the recipe. I'm going to talk about that in the main topic today. Okay, that's going to be August 29th through the 31st. Get your tickets, y'all. I know a lot of people are waiting as of late. When I was talking to Joel Salatin privately, yeah, he was talking about it. You know, what's really screwing him up and a lot of others is that people are waiting until the last minute to buy tickets, and that's really been a problematic thing in so many different ways because you got to make plans for the number of people that are coming. So, y'all, please sign up. I know some of y'all are waiting until the last minute, but please don't do that because we're going to have a cutoff at some point because we got to tell the chefs how many people they're cooking for. So, yeah, get signed up. So pig processing, I got that with Jason from Sow the Land. That's at also, you can see a link for that on our website, permapasturesfarm.com, or you can go to sowtheland.com and you'll find that there also in the show description. That's going to be August 25th through the 25th and 26th, and then November 15th and 16th. And by the way, Jason's going to be out there at that Homesteaders United Jamboree, also the Holler Homestead. And that's it, I'm really excited about that. So, Ben's my homeboy. And, they got a new baby there. So it's funny. My grandbaby's going to be there. I guess his baby will be there. And, I'm looking forward to hanging out with them as well. It's when you do these things, it's always like something of a reunion because we're all so doggone busy, man. And even though you may live an hour apart, it might as well be 1,000 miles because it's, you got to run a farm. You got to be real cautious and efficient with your time. So we don't always get together. So, everybody that comes is going to see them as well. So Jason and I'm not sure Jason and everybody else is coming, but Jason's going to be here. And I'm pretty sure, well, I'll let him announce it, but I think Ben and Meg and all the gang is going to be there. I love their kids, man. They're just so fantastic. And, had a really awesome conversation with Ben today. I was actually going to make this topic today something we talked about, but I think I'm going to save that. I don't want to go off half cocked on this. I want to make sure I put some work in on that one. All right. So, before we get into the good news, Redemption Shield. Yeah. 10% off with promo code PERMA. Y'all, my bare feet right now in this studio are on this grounding mat. I am trying to be as often as I can to be as grounded as I can, y'all. I'm telling you what, as a journeyman electrician, 27 years experience, look, y'all, I'm here to tell you, the more and more and more I examine this stuff, the more I know what's floating around in the air in terms of transient voltage and all the other stuff that's going through your walls and, the cell phones and everything. Folks, you cannot be grounded enough. You don't necessarily have to go to Redemption Shield, but if you want one in the house, they got stuff to ground your whole bed. I suggest the mat. They also have the stuff to ground your feet. So get yourself grounded because, man, check out the work of Clint Ober, the guy who basically has done pretty much or at least paid for most of the work done on grounding these days. It will blow your mind what happens when you ground. In a nutshell, when you're sitting at a computer all day, for all you folks that got desk jobs, I want you to hear me. You're sitting at that computer all day. Your red blood cells are clumped up. They can't carry oxygen. Not well. When you ground, it separates those cells, those red blood cells, and it allows you to carry more oxygen. And it's pretty hard for cancer to exist in an oxygen-rich environment. That's also why I tell you to do the deep breathing. Do it several times a day. It will absolutely stimulate you. In addition to that, do some deep breathing while grounded. Even if you're at your job, you can do some very subtle deep breathing techniques while you're working. So you can keep yourself chill for that annoying person in the cubicle across from you, that maybe just absolutely annoying. It'll ease your mind. It'll, chill you out. But most importantly, your blood is going to be able to carry more oxygen. And we all need that these days. All right. So the good news, Dr. Roger Marshall, now this is going to kind of tie into what I was talking about, or at least alluding to earlier. Dr. Roger Marshall announces a full investigation into bias censorship at Google. Propaganda wing of the left. Nah, I'm going to say it's a propaganda wing of, remember, it's not red state, it's not blue state, it's the state against you, and that's who Google's working for. But, man, if you guys only knew, I talked to a lot of other people that, put out content. And, quite a few of them. Folks, it would shock you. I've said it a million times. We're in the middle of a homesteading tsunami. And Stu Peters had a show the other day. had one of these whistleblowers, and they were talking about what's going on with X, and it's happening on Google and all these other platforms. Now, I'm calling this good news because somebody's actually looking into it, as if we got to be told, but that guy from Stu Peters the other day basically openly admit that, you know, there. Let's say you have a bunch of homesteaders, okay, and they put you in a big giant group. They will allow certain numbers within that group to go ahead and, you know, there are people I know that have very, very good numbers in terms of people watching their videos, but their subscriber count doesn't grow. That is an impossibility. Absolute impossibility. Unless the scale is being weighted. So these videos that they produce are only being shown to people that are already in their, you know, part of their group. And then, of course, they're sending us BS analytics about how it's going down. And they tell you what you ought to be doing. You know, you can follow the recipe all you want. And at the end of the day, they will only allow certain people to get seen. Even though record numbers are getting into this space, do you think they're trying to look up something on the Permaculture Pimpcast? Yeah, they probably are. So what's happening is that all of this information is being stifled. So that's why I ask you, if this show has any value to you, send it out to other people that might find it valuable, because they are absolutely weighing down the scales in all of these platforms, and Rumble's included in there. I'm dead serious. Unless you're a Dan Bongino and a Rumble channel or a few others, you're really not getting a whole lot of exposure. But Google is basically YouTube, and they're doing the very same thing. So like I said, you have YouTubers out there. Some of these are people I don't even like in the homestead world. They got 1 million subscribers, and they're getting the kind of numbers that a person with 30,000 subscribers would have. I mean, it's even crazier. I don't know. What do I have? 150 some thousand subscribers on YouTube, but I had more views back when I had 10,000. How's that possible? They're weighing the scales. I'm not complaining. You know, I wouldn't talk the way I did if I didn't. I knew full well saying what I say is going to have consequences. It did back when I was doing terrestrial radio. It is always going to have consequences. So, you know, doing the right thing doesn't mean you keep your job. And, you know, at the end of the day, I like to think I'm a town crier. You know, I'm putting out this information for the benefit of my fellow earthlings, and consequences be damned. I really feel that way. I'm doing what I think I'm meant to do, is to be something of a town crier and try to teach this awesome design science called permaculture. If I could evangelize that, like I said, I'm not looking for 1 million people. I'm looking for the right people, and we're finding them. But unfortunately, you know, a whole lot of people are being unsubscribed. Like I said, I got friends out there that get maybe 50, 60,000 views on every video, but they barely grow. That's an impossibility. It doesn't happen unless they're playing games with the numbers. Or there'll be some with, like I said, how do I have 150,000, but I got fewer views now than I did at 10,000? So I'm just going to keep plugging along, keep doing what I'm doing. I'm not doing any of it, to be honest with you, to get famous. I'm not doing any of that. I'm doing it because I want to see Comfrey so ubiquitous that I can't sell it. That's what I want to see. I want to see permaculture so ubiquitous that I bring up the word and people are like, yeah, I don't know all about it, bro. What are you talking about? That's what I want. Because that means the more people that we have that understand self-reliance, that understand community, that understand that your food doesn't have to come under plastic. I was having a conversation and, you know, and this is the same thing that happened with us. We got family members in my family that if they didn't buy it at the store, they don't want to eat it, even though you grew it in your garden. They would rather have that food that came from some, you know, sadly, some Mexican slave pooping in the middle of the field, giving you salmonella. They would rather eat that than the stuff I'm pulling out of my garden. Believe it or not, man, I like I said, I got family members the very same way. Astonishing. I mean, just absolutely astonishing. All right, next good news story. And like I said, I'm calling that good news because at least people are starting to wake up. And that's how it begins, you know. You don't wake up immediately. You just kind of do it in stages. So maybe that's the beginning of a good thing. All right, so Air New Zealand, first major airline to abandon impractical climate goals, citing lack of realistic solutions. And folks, if you only saw the things they're imposing upon some of these airlines, it would blow your mind. But here's the part that really gets me, is that the very people imposing these things, you know, the Bill Gates, the Klaus Schwabs, the all the other people out there that are imposing these things, they don't, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, same guy telling you to be green, but meanwhile, he's on a yacht flying in a private jet, the whole nine yards. Yeah. Yeah, the limousine liberals. So, yeah, you got a major airline saying, you know what, we ain't playing that game. So that's good news. All right, the last one, and I'm sorry to beat this dead horse, y'all, because I know everybody's probably sick and tired of hearing about it. But this is good news. Politicians worldwide decry the mockery of the Last Supper at the Paris Olympics opening ceremony. And I'll tell you what. Now, all of you Christians out there should be a little bit embarrassed. I'll tell you why. The Muslim community was more outraged by this than the Christian community. Can you believe that? Yeah, in the Quran, I think Jesus is a prophet, but they seem to have had greater acrimony, really, regarding all of this than the people I know in the Christian community. Yeah, they were outraged by this. But by and large, most of us in the United States of Amnesia, hell, that sucks. Yeah, can you pass the potatoes, please? Yeah. But it is cool that politicians worldwide, that's a good and a bad thing. I'm going to say it this way, y'all. And I said it, I think, in the last show. They no longer care what you think. Have you gotten that memo? Have you got that figured out? Because I do. They are so in your face with this stuff anymore. And it's also a lot of times, it's a revelation of the method in a very slick kind of way. They did it with COVID at the previous Olympics. I mean, go back and watch that opening ceremony. It didn't make a whole lot of sense at that time, but it does now. They foreshadow what they intend to do a lot of times. It's called lesser magic. It's called karmic debt. You know, they feel like if they don't let you know what they're about to do, even if it's, you know, kind of hidden out there, that the karmic repercussions to them is going to be something else. And that's exactly what they believe. They believe this stuff. But it's good that at least some of the politicians, I mean, many of them almost certainly are sold out to the powers that shouldn't be, but at least they're out there doing a little bit of lip service because they know the people are outraged by this. So apparently there aren't as many hoople heads out there that, you know, I previously thought. So I'm gonna chalk that one up as good news as well. Y'all, look, I know there's a lot of craziness in this world, but I'm going to go right back to solutions, just like I did with my man Rob the other day and on his program, Disorganized Productions. If you haven't checked it out, go over there, check him out. He does a lot of really, really helpful shows. But with that, we're going to go to my man, Eric Sider.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, designing for community. People can be the greatest asset or the largest impediment to getting things done. As Jeff Lawton says, we can be equally as positive as we currently are negative. A lot of that comes down to design, but we also have to make the conscious decision to do so. My community group has a great opportunity to get land right in the center of town. It's not free, and it will be our first significant fundraising campaign to make it happen. Free land is possible, but when and where are usually out of your control. And once you demonstrate your capabilities, more opportunities will present themselves. This is not going to be a fast process either. My motto for this project is, hurry up and wait. To have community buy-in and longevity, the community will need to be involved. I'm not talking consensus, but the design phase will need to have community input. This will be the biggest challenge for me. I'll need to remove my personal perspective and ego from the equation. I will have to remind myself that I am not the client, and someone else will be managing it eventually. So certain species I would choose personally might not be appropriate. Bill Mollison always said, the more restrictions on a site, the better the design. My patience will certainly be tested, and I will have to answer a lot of questions and justify a lot of choices. But this is what I signed up for when I started this permaculture community group. And I want this to be a model that other people can use to start one in their communities. As the saying goes, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider. And if you're in need of permaculture t-shirts or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com.
That's my dog, y'all. I mean, man, he packs so much in there. And I just want to take one part of it out and not take it out, but I mean, expand on one part of it. And, you know, when you show somebody what you can do, folks, I've done it over and over and over again. I've talked about it extensively where when I was in Texas still doing, I called it the permaculture at work thing that I was doing in some of my earliest videos, where I was literally farming at a construction site, a real life construction site. I had chickens out there. Boy, that freaked them out. But I also started a food forest, which, by the way, they're getting peaches off of still right now. And I put that in years ago. And I'll tell you what happened is because I was able, I basically, in a nutshell, I showed them what I could do on that particular job. And I did it. Other places around there, it was kind of in an industrial park. I was basically an electrical inspector. I was an inspector for the jobs that were going on out there. They were basically making components for Google. I mean, for Facebook, Google, you name it. And they would put them on trucks and then they would send them out there. And I would inspect the equipment before it went out there, make sure it was electrically sound. And so, I mean, these were long, long days and I was out there farming on the job. Well, I'll tell you what, because I was doing that, there was a parole office next door and they had 5 acres over there. Next thing you know, they're courting me on it. And then there was 30 acres that were that the company I was working with, they had out there. I mean, you name it, y'all. I was out there. I had land thrown at me just because I made a little demonstration site that other people could see. That 5 acres over at the parole office, I mean, man, before we decided to leave Texas, I was like planning on, you know, I was going to have sheep out there. I was going to run a straight up food forest. I mean, you name it. All of it was going to be really something else. But like Eric said, when you're working in these communities, y'all, that can be tough. But I know Eric can do it. I mean, if anybody can do it, I know it. I know he can. But that I think that's really great, man. If you can get a hold of some land, get some community going, and it can't be a consensus process because you never get anywhere. There's got to be, to a certain extent, a benevolent dictatorship when it comes to things like that, where ultimately everybody puts their case out there. You get a person who's not run by ego or emotions, and then that person or group, a very small group of people, and it has to be wise people. They put their heads together and they put up a design that makes sense. Tough to do in a community, but a whole lot easier to do when you're doing it by yourself. But yeah, a lot of us don't have the ability to go out there and buy a bunch of land. But like I said, start. I gave that other example. Oh my goodness, that was here in North Carolina. I almost forgot about that. I was, and there was another story I forgot to tell y'all. I'm going to regress a little bit here, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you because I should have told you in the last two podcasts. I was out in North Carolina. I was out doing some guerrilla gardening. Guy came up on me with a dog. I know I did this video and asked what I was doing. I told him what I did, told him about our YouTube channel. And then he's like, okay, if you can do something with this, man, I'll go ahead and give you a, you know, I forget how many other acres across town. It was still in Asheville. It was like vacant land that he was going to let me farm as long as I showed myself on this one. And then I explained to him, I said, well, I'm kind of doing this as a demonstration. I mean, I do appreciate the offer, but I'm like, okay, here it is. I had an acre of land out there where he caught me working in land that I thought was public easement, but it wasn't. Explained what I was doing. He offered the whole acre to me to go ahead and cultivate. And it was on some, you know, kind of steep property, but it would have been great for an orchard. I mean, good night. It's available out there, y'all. Just stop being afraid of hearing no. Get out there, go put foot to butt on a lot of this stuff, and you'd be shocked at what you're able to make happen. EMP Shield, y'all, $50 off with promo code PERMA. Look, I ain't going to kid you. Once again, they didn't reach out to me. I reached out to them. I love this little EMP micro that they have. Good night, man. If you got a motorcycle, lawn tractor, I mean, you name it, that thing is fantastic. But also they cover your house, y'all. And the thing I love more than anything, if anything gets past this thing and blows up anything in the house, 25 G's, they're going to cover you. That's what I'm talking about, EMP Shield. Now, before I get into this, y'all, I keep meaning to say this. I've meant to say this ever since the Trump, pretty close to about that time, the so-called assassination thing. Look, y'all, I forgot to tell you that when I was in the Army, I did presidential security. I did it once. I kid you not, I was stationed at Fort Bragg, and Al Gore came to town, and that polecat was on stage. And I kid you not, I was part of that ring. It was me and a bunch of other soldiers from our unit. We didn't have weapons or anything, but we were out there in our maroon berets, and you know, we're standing around that stage, and then behind us were the Secret Service. Now, they had us probably, I would say, maybe five arm lengths away from one another. And this is the Vice President of the United States at the time. He comes to town. And I remember thinking at that time, good night, man. I can't believe all the security here. And there were Secret Service people behind us. Now, we're facing the crowd. And Al Gore, I didn't even, you know, I got a glimpse of him. And that was him running off the stage just to, you know, get back into Air Force Two and go wherever else he was going to go. Anyway, I remember there was a lady Secret Service agent, and of course they had the jacket on. This little child ran past me and the other soldier, and then got back there. This Secret Service woman snatched up that child, walked the child, and it was a little girl, back to her mom, points her finger in her face and says, "Control your child," and then walks away. And then the lady is looking at the Secret Service agent, the female Secret Service agent, like, I can't believe this just happened. But man, she was bold, like straighten that out right on the spot. Y'all, there was a military presence, massive military presence, for the Vice President of the United States. Okay? It's like Colonel Fletcher Prouty says, the guy that they created the Mr. X character in the movie JFK, where he said, it's not what happens, it's what's supposed to happen that doesn't, that should make you raise an eyebrow. Now, like I said, I barely looked into this thing. The whole thing seems like it stinks to high heaven to me. I'm not buying anything anybody tells me, not if it came from the prostitute media. But I keep forgetting to tell y'all that I actually did at one time when that polecat Al Gore flew into Fort Bragg, there I was. And there must have been an entire company. In fact, I'm pretty sure it was the whole Alpha Company 307th Engineer Battalion that was out there guarding this clown. And that was a vice president. Ain't that crazy? So, I mean, I can't believe I forgot to tell y'all all this time. I mean, I don't know how I keep forgetting that. Maybe because it was forgettable. But yeah, I did do a little bit of presidential security. I mean, albeit, you know, in that capacity. But yeah, there you have it. So do what you can with that. That's just my story regarding all that. All right, so I'm going to get into, I know I'm going all over the place, y'all, here, but I keep forgetting, and then as soon as the show is over, I'm like, I can't believe I forgot to say that. You think I'd write it down. All right, y'all. A conversation with a friend of mine made me think about a couple of things. I understand that, I guess I'm not understanding, I'm not doing a very good job of explaining certain things. And I'm failing to remember that so many people are at different places getting into this. So it's kind of critical that I cover some of the basics before I take it any further, because I'm going to start talking more about this. And anybody wants to know more about compost, I've done a pretty extensive series over there on Patreon. I mean, you can get it in for as little as a buck. But I just want to briefly cover making compost basics. So if you're one of those people coming to the class, you're going to have a little bit of a background on this, and then maybe define a few other things, because I know that it's been a little bit confusing for some people out there, because I might be speaking past, I'm talking about these different things and I'm not giving any backbone for it. So I'm going to try to do a little bit of that today. So you're making a compost pile, y'all, in a nutshell. Here's how it's going to go for me in the winter. It's going to be 20% high nitrogen, 30% regular nitrogen, and then 50% carbon. Now, Let me define high nitrogen. That's going to be things like blood, dead animals, guts. Depending on the time of year, it could be comfrey. It could be your high octane stuff, like your nitrogen fixing ground covers, like your clovers and stuff like that. That's going to be what I'm calling high nitrogen. Regular nitrogen is going to be like grass clippings, things of that nature. Also, high nitrogen could be animal poop. Now, when I use animal poop in my compost, it's usually been dried out, and then I'll reconstitute it right before I do that. For a bunch of reasons. Number one, it's going to just blend into your pile so much better. Okay, so that's my winter blend. 20 high nitrogen, 30 nitrogen, 50 carbon. And in terms of carbon, for me, that's going to be everything from straw that hasn't been sprayed. It's going to be a little bit of wood chips at about 1-inch, you know, squares or whatever. I'm only going to have a very small portion of that, but it could be wood shavings that came out of your chicken coop. It could be any of that stuff. Leaves, you know, that's usually a pretty good component too. The more diversity, this is where DEI actually makes sense, and that's in your compost pile. Because all of those microbes that are on the outsides of all the things I talked about, that's why you want so many materials that'll make your head spin. You want so many different materials in there because it makes all the difference. You want as much diversity of life as possible. Now, my summer blend is going to be 10%, 40, and 50. So 10% high nitrogen, 40% regular nitrogen, and then 50% carbon. Now, can I use my winter blend in the summer? Yeah, but you're going to have to watch it because that stuff's going to get hot. And when I mean hot, I'm talking like blowing up if you're not careful, especially in this kind of humidity. So in terms of building these piles, and I got to give a little backbone here because I know that I've been losing people along the way. And like I said, I'm sorry for that. Before, you're not even technically composting until that temperature hits 131. So in that pile, if you're doing a Berkeley method, you're not going to be looking for temperature or anything like, or Berkeley or 18-day compost method. That's going to be a more advanced way to do it. And what I'm teaching at this Jamboree is going to be the method I'm talking about here. We're using our thermometer as a barometer. It's going to tell you, it's going to give you every indication you need. So you need a good high quality thermometer like Reo Temp, made out of stainless steel. They can be calibrated. You can recalibrate them, and you should every once in a while. So you want a stainless thermometer that's at least 3 feet long. I got one that's 4 feet, but I got several 3 feet, and they're not cheap. There's going to be about $100 or more. So you take that thermometer, and obviously you want to make sure it's usually going to come pretty well calibrated. Now, when you hit 131 degrees, that's when the composting process has officially begun, because you don't even start killing the negative stuff until it hits 131 at the core. So anywhere between 131 to 145, it's going to go 3 days. From 145 to 150, it's going to go 2 days. And then over 150, it's essentially going to be 1 day. But I never let it ride above that, because usually you're going to have a lot of actinobacteria. You're going to have a lot of problems. It can be done. It's just more of a pain. So let me talk about some other things in here. And this is, like I said, this is just very basic stuff. And it's important because I didn't realize I was losing people along the way. I'm speaking about this stuff as if people have been doing it as long as I have. And I'm just going to kind of take a step back here. So those are the components of the pile. Okay. Now, you need at least, you can do it with smaller amounts, but in order to really make those microbes happy, you got to have a cubic yard of material. In fact, I think you ought to go with more, because it's going to be hard for you to maintain temperature. Folks, I can't begin to tell you how important that is. Most people, when it comes to composting, troubleshooting, it's never big enough. That's their number one problem. I kid you not. So a square meter, I would actually go, if you can go 2, that's even better. Do not go over 3, because that's when you start risking fire if it gets away from you, if you don't really know what you're doing. You don't want to go over 3 cubic yards. That's when you really kind of know what you need to know what you're doing. But no less than a meter, and anywhere between 1 and 2 to me is sufficient. So that's another compost thing. Your moisture. You should be able to squeeze it as hard as you can, man or woman, it doesn't matter, and get one drop out of it. So if that's the nature of the materials you're putting in your pile, if you're not squeezing it hard enough to get a single drop out of it, your moisture ain't good. So add moisture. And preferably water. If you got to do it, you want to try to get in all of your moisture on the front end. Because here's the problem. If you don't get in enough moisture when you're putting that pile together, when you're flipping it and you're using water that's coming, let's say, from the ground, you're starting your pile. To a certain extent, you're starting it over again. And what you're also doing is that when you take the heat out of that pile, your harmful bacteria is now starting to get a chance to take root again. Because that's why the composting process starts at 131, because that's when those guys start dying. They can't stand the high heat, but your good guys can. That's critical. So if you can, try to use ambient. If you know, oh man, I think this pile might be dry, try to get some ambient temperature water. And that's going to go a lot further than stuff that's coming straight up out of your well. So that's kind of important too. Now, let me talk about some differences here. I had every intention to go into deeper, but I'm kind of getting long in this podcast, but I want to also talk about a couple of other things. Now, I know there's been some confusion out there regarding extracts and teas. I'm going to define it the way Dr. Elaine Ingham does. People say compost tea, they kind of use it interchangeably. They don't really, they're meaning extract and tea. Well, she's like, okay, we need to create divisions. So when you hear me talk about an extract, it is basically compost that I put into an aqueous form, meaning that I've taken all of the life that's in that hand of compost that you have, right? And I now put it in a solution in the water. And the way I do it is I take it, and I think I've even showed you how to do this on YouTube, but I know that I've done it on Patreon, where, you know, you fill up a 400 micron bag. It can't be any smaller than that. 400 mic, and if you get anything that allows bigger particles through, well, it's going to clog up your stuff. So 400 microns is about the best you can hope for, because your fungal hypha, it's just big enough where your fungal hypha in your compost can get through there, and all of your nematodes and all the other things, because your nematodes are some of the biggest things in there, and you need a big, well, not the fungal hypha, it's the nematodes actually, because they're so doggone big. You still got to use a microscope to look at them, but they're one of the bigger organisms down in there. And these guys, those nematodes, they almost look like worms. They look like under the microscope. Yeah, they kind of look like, you know, whales or something, like a weird kind of whale. But anyway, 400 micron bag, and I'm squeezing that bag in the water and I'm getting that stuff out of it. There's a way to do it properly. I probably need to do another Patreon video on that, where you get the organisms out of the compost and into the water. Now, when it's in that water, that, ladies and gentlemen, is a compost extract. That right there, I mean, nothing else. All I'm doing is taking, you can call it an extraction. Basically, I've extracted the organisms from the compost into the water solution, okay? So that's important. And when you do that sort of thing, it can't be chlorinated water, y'all. It's not going to work. You can put some fulvic acid in there if you do have chlorinated water. Sit it in the sun for a while. There's a number of different ways in which to get that water better. Anyway, it's now an extract. Now, the difference between an extract and a tea is that a tea is very different. Very, very different. Excuse me. In a compost tea, what I'm doing, I'm first making an extract, at least the way I do it. And a tea is going to be a foliar spray. Here's how a tea is different. When I use that extract, it is for the sole purpose for it to drench into the soil, drag all those microbes, the beneficial microbes, put them down into the soil for the benefit of everything out there, right? But when you make a tea, it is essentially a foliar spray, because a tea is made in such a way to where I'm taking that extract and I'm now putting food, bacterial food, fungal food, into that extract to multiply the organisms in there. Well, check this out. When they multiply, they create glues. So, you know, I think it takes 8 hours for I don't remember it all. I should remember. It takes minutes basically for bacteria to multiply. It takes longer for fungus, and then your protozoa takes longer still, and then for your nematodes, man, we're talking weeks. I mean, it's like 21 days on a nematode. I mean, a nematode takes as long to produce as a chicken does, or a chicken egg to hatch. So that is a very different thing. So when you say compost tea, to most people, they're talking drenched. That's not what a compost tea is. A compost tea is basically a foliar spray. So why would I need to do that? Here's what is awesome, y'all. You can take a compost tea, and as soon as, let's say you got a problem child out there. Let's say you got a tree that's not doing so wonderful. If you make a proper tea that has all that life in there and you spray it on the leaves, those glues now stick to those leaves and they occupy, all you need is like 70% coverage on there. I don't even think it's that much. If you can get 70% coverage, if you can spray that on the leaves of your plants, you're not killing anything. Your good guys displace the bad guys. They can't take root. This is a really cool thing to do until your soil is up to snuff to where your plant gets all of everything it needs out of the soil. But that's why I would use a compost tea. So if you have a problem child out there, I wonder how well it would work on things like cedar rust and stuff like that. Probably quite well. I don't know because I haven't examined it yet. But honestly, all of your beneficial guys are taking up those spots, those sites, so the bad guys can't get them. I mean, how cool is that? You get kind of the same effect. It's not the same exact thing, but you get a similar effect when you spray raw milk on your trees. I mean, you mix your milk 50-50 in a pump sprayer, and you go out there and spray your leaves. That's exactly what you're doing there, except that's mostly bacteria. It's not going to be a whole lot of fungus in there. But if I can make a compost tea, I'm now covering all of those sites that my bacteria and my fungi both would want. Whereas when I'm doing a milk spray or something like that, I'm basically only covering the sites that bacteria would cover. So now I'm just going to tell you straight, making compost tea is tricky, especially when it gets warmer out. Because, man, there's a point when these guys, and it might be a sleepless night for you because you got to take measurements like pretty often. And when you get to making this stuff, man, I mean, if it's, like I said, if it's warm out, all of a sudden you're going to have these guys explode and then you got to use this stuff immediately. Or if it gets away from you, all of a sudden it'll go anaerobic again because now the good guys are out of food. They've outcompeted, they ate up all the food and now they're dead. And now the bad guys are taking over. So that's kind of how it works. It's a little trickier to make. So this is why I highly suggest to anybody out there, if you want to stretch your compost, make an extract. And I realize that I've done videos on this, but I haven't done one lately and I probably have to. So here's what I'm talking about. Let's say you made some really incredible compost, okay? Let's say you made some really awesome compost, but you got to really spread it out. I mean, you don't know how you're going to cover all this. Folks, the way you do it is make an extract out of it. Take that stuff, get a 400 micron bag, and you massage it under the water. You do it over and over. I do it usually 5 times per 5-gallon bucket. That's how I do it. And usually, if you look at that, man, usually if it's good stuff, you could do it once or twice, and it's good to go. But more is better in a case like this. So I do it about 5 times, and it'll be like 2 big handfuls of compost that I put in that micron bag. Get it under the water, spray it. I mean, squeeze it. You don't squeeze it hard. You just try to run water through it to get the stuff out of it. Your water will turn brown. That's your fulvic acid and your humic acids coming out of it. And now, what can you do? You could now take that 5-gallon bucket of some really ballin' stuff, stick it in, let's say, a 100-gallon stock tank, put a sprayer on the end of it, and then now you can cover an entire acre with it and get that stuff everywhere. Folks, okay, you can go out there, you can take this compost, you can put it in your garden, but you will get far more bang for your buck if you can make an extract and just hit your garden with it, and then sooner or later, that life will take off on its own. You keep doing it over and over again. So if you don't have a lot, that's a way to really, really stretch what you have. So those are just some of the basics. I'm going to go into more of this, hopefully on Patreon. More than likely, I'll hit it on YouTube before too long, because like I said, this, everybody wants to know how to, not everybody, but a lot of folks want to know how to process. They want to know how to grow stuff. But look, if you're reliant on going to the store to go get your fertility, you're already on a path for failure. I hate to tell you this, but you are. So folks, I mean, that's compost basics right there. Like I said, you know, I gave you my winter blend. I gave you my summer blend. If you want to know more, go check us out on Patreon, because that's, and then if you really want to get hands-on and see this thing, you're going to have to show up at the Homesteaders United Jamboree, because that's where I am going to break this down to where every single person out there, if you go to this thing, you should have a dummy-proof way of making. I know compost is tricky, y'all, and so many people complain about, oh man, I can't seem to get it right. Well, I'm going to show you the dummy-proof way of doing this out there, and I'm going to give you, you're going to see the very recipe that I talked about. It's probably going to be my high nitrate, my high nitrogen blend of 20, 30, 50. I'm going to show you how to do this, and I'm going to show you how to make it dummy-proof to where you can make some unbelievable killer compost at home. I'm going to show you what the good stuff should look like, what it should smell like, all those things, what it should feel like, the whole nine yards. You're going to learn it out there. And this is the beginning of how we get there. All right, y'all, I'm not going to go to the Q&A today because, frankly, I've already run a little long in the tooth on this one. I want to thank everybody for checking us out. Until next time, stay alert, stay alive.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.